This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. I am very, very pleased to have with us Ralph McGeehee, who is a 25-year veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency. Ralph McGeehee's book, Deadly Deceits, has become a textbook in some college classes. We've talked a lot about the CIA with other guests like Peter Dale Scott and Gary Webb and Bob Perry. And I am, as I said, very pleased and very excited to have Ralph McGeehee with us because Ralph McGeehee spent 25 years as an agent for the Central Intelligence Agency. Mr. McGeehee, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
You were recruited by the CIA in 1952 after being a star football player at Notre Dame, where apparently Philip Agee went to Notre Dame too, correct?
That's correct, yes. I tried out with the Green Bay Packers and was cut from the team and was recruited at that time.
Let's talk, if we will, about how the agency goes about recruiting men such as yourself and others, because as I understand it, they're also in a major recruitment mode now, too, correct?
That's correct. Yes, they are. At that time, the agency was recruiting a lot of paramilitary officers. Probably they're doing some of that to this day, at this time. And they were looking for athletic young men, so they were sort of trolling amongst the rejects of the National Football League. I received a telegram saying, would you be interested in an important government job? Something like the State Department. I said, oh boy, this sounds great. This is when I got cut from the Packers. And I said, oh yes. And I was scheduled for an interview down at the Chicago courthouse. I lived in Chicago. And after the interview, I was sent down to Washington for further processing.
When the Central Intelligence Agency attempts to recruit a young man as yourself in 1952, I mean, how do they go about that? I mean, do they say, well, gee, how would you like to come and be a spy for us or something?
Well, actually, I didn't know who I was being recruited for. All I was told is something like the State Department, and it wasn't really, for another. After I went down to Washington, I was assigned to a personnel pool, and we were down there and began to beginning rumors about what organization we'd be working for. But it wasn't until about 3 or 4 months after I was down there when I actually learned that it was the CIA. And at that point, it didn't mean a lot to me because I don't think I'd ever heard of the agency.
Mr. McGeehee, you go to work for the agency, and in reading some of your biography, I mean, this was something that when it was presented to you what the agency was supposedly doing, fighting communism, at that time, I mean, you jumped into this kind of with both feet, correct?
Oh, yes. I was extremely honored to have been named to be at the forefront of the fight against communism. And, of course, the anti-religious and all that sort of thing. So I was very honored and committed to being part of this noble crusade. This was after the House Un-American Activities Committee, or while the House Committee, where it was holding hearings about communism in the United States. And everywhere you talked, where you talked to your professors, to your parents, to whatever. Communism was a very big topic, and it was seen as a major threat, or the major threat, to our way of life. And to be selected to be part of this noble crusade against communism, which was just an immense honor. I served overseas 14 years. I was in Japan. I was in the Philippines. I was in Taiwan. I had 6 years in Thailand, and I had a 2-year tour in Vietnam. And between those overseas tours, which were 14 of my 25 years, I had tours in Washington, primarily in Langley, Virginia. So it was periods of going overseas for 2 or 3 years, coming back and working at Langley, and then going back overseas. In the first 17 years of my career, I remain a very committed cold warrior who is out to fight the evils of the communist demons, anti-religious demons. And then I was just in Thailand, I guess in my 17th or 18th year, when I was assigned to work against the Communist Party of Thailand, and it was here that my views and perspectives began to change completely.
But maybe we could explore a little bit about what happens at Langley and then talk about your experience in Southeast Asia.
Well, the agency, and this is all in retrospect, when I began to appreciate it, but the agency is fairly much a hermetically sealed society where all of the information, all of the facts, all of the projects you're supporting, they all have to be accepted wholeheartedly in order to complete your job. So a major portion in writing up project outlines, in writing up dispatches, and whatever you did had to reflect the Cold War mentality. If you, for instance, might suggest in some of your writings that maybe entering the Vietnam War would not be a good thing to do, well, you'd find your career shortchanged immediately. But at that particular period, when I was there in the agency and a loyal supporter, none of this bothered me. So whenever I wrote up a project outline, I'd say, you know, I'd talk about the evils of communism and the bad things they did, and the good things we were going to do to correct those.
We're talking with Ralph McGeehy, 25-year veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency. One of the things that I read that you had wrote, Mr. McGeehy, was that the agency likes to get people who will basically follow orders and not think too much about it, correct?
That's very correct. They have a psychological assessment test. It's pretty much the standard tests that are given across the country, Binet something test. And what it looks for is people with sort of rigid mentalities, people who are team players, and people who don't like to think too much. And they have various sort of rating categories. And you, when you go down to Washington to be tested for these jobs, you go through these psychological assessments. And those that don't score well just don't get accepted. So they're looking for the team player and the man with a rigid mentality that is can only see black and whites, cannot see shades of gray in any situation, and are socially amenable and very should be pleasant. So you have the what they call the externalizer. Though these are the factors: externalizer, regulated, adaptable. The ERA personality is what they're looking for.
People who will fit into the system, and once in the system, won't challenge the system too much, just accept it.
Will never challenge the system.
Well, that didn't happen with you. Why is that?
Yeah, I think I've got a classic personality profile. I was a football player from Notre Dame, and I think they expected to get an ERA type of profile from me. But since there was a real hiring crush at that particular time with the Korean War and everything else that was going on in the world, they kind of let me slip through. Somehow or another, they let me slip through, and it almost dictates. I hate to say this. I like to think it was sort of personal ethics that did it, but my mentality almost dictates that I would be a protester.
So you're working at Langley, and you know you're just a gung-ho CIA agent, and you're fighting communism and doing all the things, fighting for truth, justice, and the American way, and all of that good stuff. And then you go to Southeast Asia, correct?
That's right.
Talk, if you will, about your experiences there.
Well, this came about in about my third tour overseas when I was sent to Thailand. And while there, I was chosen to run a project with the Thai National Police, which is a 50,000-man national police force. And the program there was to discover what the communists were doing. There are all sorts of incidents happening in the northeast part of Thailand to discover what they were doing and to report about it and to counter those activities. And I kind of looked at that as my mission impossible. Here I am, one person, one American, going to train the 50,000-man Thai National Police on how to, and these the Thai police were virtually or basically unschooled patrolmen. And I was going to train them to be sophisticated intelligence officers and effective counterinsurgents. So I call this my mission impossible. What was happening, there are all sorts of incidents in the northeast and in the mountainous regions of Thailand that were happening and causing a lot of concern because the war next door was in Laos and the war in Vietnam and Cambodia. So there was a lot of concern that was spreading into Thailand, and I was given this job. The agency at that time was reporting that there were approximately 2,500 members of the Communist Party in Thailand scattered throughout these mountainous and backwoods areas, and that they had no popular support within the lowland villagers. Well, I put together a team operation. Fortunately, I had an outstanding team, Thai team leader. It consisted of Thai police and some other government employees. And we went into, what we did is organized all the information on that particular area by village, by names of people in the village, and we formed an interrogation program and sent them in the village to find out what was going on, and we interviewed and interrogated almost everybody. And we weren't underway very long until we found out that what was happening is that the communists were organizing in the village, and they were organizing amongst the poor farmers, and most everybody was poor. And these people were becoming dedicated communists. And the agency were saying there are only 2,500 in the whole country, and we were finding that many in just a local one province, one of the 52 provinces of Thailand. My reports on this, and I could name, because of the specificity that we were developing, I could name the villages, I could name the villagers within them, I could tell what the villagers, the propaganda they had received, the training they had received, and all of this. And just an example, one of the people said, well, I'm a poor Thai farmer, I have no real hopes for my family or for myself. Best I can hope for my daughter is to become a prostitute in Bangkok, and my son will live my life. And the communists came in and said, well, you're being subverted by this dictatorship, military dictatorship that is supported by the American people, supported by the United States, and you have no prospects. Join the communist movement and we'll change all that. And he said, when I looked at my life, it was exactly as they were saying it was. I said, well, of course, this is what is happening to me. And I joined the communist movement. My son became also joined. He became a guerrilla in the mountains, and we have dedicated our lives to a communist victory. And we went from village to village, and Thumbon, which is county. Within that one province, we found the same thing everywhere. And I said at the end of about 6 months in that province, I could name 2,500 individuals by name in the lowland villages. When the agency was saying they're only guerrillas and they're all up in the mountainous areas, and he said that they have no support within the lowland villages. So the agency's intelligence was completely erroneous. Had we gone to any of the other 51 provinces, we would have found much of the same story there. So the agency's intelligence was badly, badly undercalculating not only the numbers, but the organization of what was going on.
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. We're talking with Ralph McGehee, 25-year veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency, also author of the book Deadly Deceits. Mr. McGehee, you had a conversation about what you were just discussing with Bill Colby, who would later go on to be the head of Central Intelligence. Can you talk a little bit about that and what happened?
Yes, he came out to the province where we were working. He spent the day out there, and I set up a briefing with my team leader, myself, and I demonstrated all of the results. And he looked very, very distressed at all of this, and I had expected him. And we found out as we talked to these villagers and we exposed what they were doing and threatened them if they didn't, you know, if they continued to be anti-government agitators, then we would take some action. They would, you know, be arrested or whatever. So the movement just collapsed in that province. So I was very eagerly giving this talk to Colby, and he seemed very distressed, and the last thing he just said to me was, oh, we always seem to be losing. Then he went back to headquarters, and I expected, you know, my career would zoom upward, and we were beating the communists all over the place, and that the project would be expanded all over the country. And instead what happened is I was called down to the station and sent home, and the program was canceled. And this began for me, I guess sort of my crusade that continues to this day. The agency did not want to hear any information that did not support policy. The policy being, in Thailand, the movement was not that strong. The problem was Vietnam, because the Thai communists had gone to school in Hoa Binh in North Vietnam and learned their organizational techniques in Hoa Binh. And they were just recreating in Thailand what had been done in Vietnam. And in Vietnam, which I later found out, the agency had started out reporting, oh, there are only a few thousand villagers scattered, or people's communists scattered in various locations, and they have no support within the villagers. And I came to find out later that they had approximately 7 million organized supporters in the country. And this was sort of my crusade within the agency. After Tet 68 in Vietnam, said, boy, I hadn't quite made the turnaround. I still believe that we were a noble crusade against communism and that we should, you know, win in Vietnam. So I volunteered to go to Vietnam, and it wasn't long when I was there, after I was there, that I discovered that the agency's reporting on Vietnam was just as bad on Vietnam as it was on Thailand. And the agency was tremendously resistant to reporting this sort of information, because in fact what it would say was saying was that the Thai communist movement, I mean the Vietnamese communist movement, was a popular movement, and there's absolutely no way we could have won. Well, the agency was dedicated to a victory in Vietnam. It didn't want to hear that it had been fighting this false war all of these years and reporting this false information. So the information was buried and never received the light of day, and we went on fighting in Vietnam, killing Vietnamese. I think some 4 million Vietnamese died in the war, and at the same time, 60,000 Americans were killed in this unwinnable war, primarily because the CIA, which had tried to create this regime in Vietnam, was unwilling, unable, in whatever other way, to recognize the reality of Vietnam.
At the same time, we have people like Bill Colby who are skewing data, research and information and investigations that agents such as yourself were doing. I mean, Colby is also heading up programs like the Phoenix assassination program and or others that are taking place in Vietnam, correct?
Yes, the Phoenix program, by the count, of the Phoenix organizer had the last count that was available, they had killed about 35,000 or murdered 35,000 Vietnamese.
Mr. McGee, let me ask you a question, because as we started the program off, I informed the listeners, reminded them of other guests that we had had on the program, guests such as Peter Dale Scott and Gary Webb, and as, of course, sir, I know you're aware, these authors and journalists and reporters have put forth major stories regarding Central Intelligence's alleged involvement in drug trafficking. Can you share with our listeners what you think about those stories that have been put forth?
I think the agency itself does not profit from the drug trade. What it does do, though, is it sets up airlines, it sets up all sorts of forms of transportation in support of its covert operations, the war in Laos, the war in Vietnam, and all of these modes of transportation are utilized by the people that they're working with, either the Vietnamese or the Laotians or whatever, and they carry on those modes of conveyance, drugs that go all over Southeast Asia that come into the United States. So, yes, indeed, there's no doubt about it. Even in CIA's Inspector General report, to some degree, alludes to this, that, yes, indeed, that drugs do come in via the mechanisms of the CIA's operations. The same thing happened in Afghanistan, of course. It happened in Vietnam, happened in Laos, happened in Burma, happened in Central America with the Contras. So one of my concerns now is the war on drugs in Colombia. Wherever you have a paramilitary action, and really what the war on drugs is in Colombia is a paramilitary war against the Colombian communists. Whenever you have such a war, you're going to have airplanes flying, you're going to have trucks going, and the drugs will be shipped via these mechanisms. So the drug war on Colombia is going to in effect, explode the drug traffic in that country into the surrounding region. So it's if you want to call it a drug war, it's a war to ship drugs into the United States.
We are very, very close to a Vietnam-like experience in Colombia, aren't we?
Yes, we are. You have a there are two communist movements there. One, I believe, is about 15,000 who have been estimated, and another is about 35,000. Of course, these are just the numbers that the official U.S. government establishment puts forth. And like in Vietnam, that may be, rather than in the thousands, those numbers may be somewhat in the millions. So we are going to experience a tremendous, tremendous explosion of another Vietnam, if you will.
We're talking with Ralph McGee, author of the book Deadly Deceits and 25-year veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency. It seems that CIA's main role is to act to some degree as the intellectual authors, if you will, of countering insurgency movements around the world. I mean, what does the agency really exist to do?
Well, in my estimation, it's really a covert action agency, that it does support or overthrow foreign governments. And in that capacity, it must propagandize not only people in those areas, but the people of the world, and primarily the American people. So I call it a covert action agency whose primary target audience for its lies is the American people. The Vietnam War is so typical, where it sponsored many, many books. Was in academia, sponsoring all sorts of studies of Vietnam and academicians. It just completely, and its media operations, of course, permeated every essence of our being, if you will, its anti-communist message in Vietnam, so that it really is a domestic disinformation operation, while it's an overseas covert action agency. Look at the official disseminations about Colombia. You know, we're not fighting communists there. We're fighting narco terrorists. That's the word that is now being used for the Colombian communists. They're not narco terrorists. We're not looking at the other side of the coin, which is that the Colombian military is the worst violator of the drugs export, much worse than the communist guerrillas. So yes, indeed, we're seeing the same sort of thing there.
Mr. McGeehy, you are involved with something called CIA Base.
What it is a computer database on CIA operations, put together with a view to countering some of the views of the media about the CIA. I've gone through about 1,000 books and media of all sorts and extracted references to various operations of the agency. I broke them down to about 100 categories, and whenever I find something that fits in the category, I put it into that category. And I've been doing this for close to 20 years, and it's... It is searchable by subject heading, which might be terrorism, might be drugs, might be assassinations or covert action or whatever. And then there's two other subfields that can be searched. And I've been putting it together for these 20 years. And I distribute I sell the disk, actually, the database. To me, it is probably the only resource that is available where you can find out just about anything you want to know about CIA operations around the world.
I know that you also have an extensive website. If people wanted to get more information about CIA Base or your book Deadly Deceits or the website, how would they go about doing that?
Well, if they could email me directly, that would be rmcgeehy, R-M-C-G-E-H-E-E, that's all one word, lowercase, at igc.org. Or if they're just interested in seeing what's on the website, and I recommend that all college students who are looking for a career go to the website, because I think it'll be very, very informative about the CIA. The website is http://com/CIA base, all one word, all in caps. So CIA base is all in caps. Just a day or so ago, I wrote a short piece about the agency's role. Apparently, is to kill democracy, not only around the world, but primarily in the United States. And it has been so successful at this that I wonder in this piece whether it is too late already, since the agency has subverted the House and Senate committees that are to oversight the agency. And we cannot know its budget. We cannot know what it does, either domestically or overseas. So it's sort of a massive secret government that runs to a large degree what goes on in the world, while misinforming we Americans of what's happening.
Ralph McGeehy, thank you for being with us on the program today. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with our audience today.
Thank you, Mike Thornton.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the program today. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and it's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you Full Logic Reverse. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by telephone, 530-271-0804. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.